Hello, and welcome to There's Hope with Homeopathy. This is a monthly show that airs the third Friday of each month and focuses on classical homeopathic treatment and how it can benefit your entire family, and especially how it can be a curative therapy in the treatment of autism. My name's Amy Lansky, and actually I'm broadcasting live this month for a change from Portola Valley, California, in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is right near Stanford University. Well, summer really is upon us now. Really exciting for me because my older son, Isaac, just graduated from high school this week. So we're going through the beginnings of the empty nest here in our family. But I still have my formerly autistic son, Max, who just finished his freshman year in high school. So, you know, with summer comes kids going off to camp and problems with allergies, insect bites, heat prostration, and all those summer kinds of things. And homeopathy has a lot to offer for these kinds of things, as it does for almost everything else. And, you know, if you'd like to find help, then I really recommend the best way to get help for those kinds of problems are just to buy some self-help books. I recommend in my own book at the back several books. There's Miranda Castro's Complete Homeopathy Handbook. Dana Ullman has several books on self-treatment. And there's also a new book out, I think there's a couple books by Ed Schultz, which I've been told are very good. So all of these self-help books for the home are great, and along with buying a home remedy kit. I just also want to say that if you are seeing a homeopath, it's always good to confer with them about your own self-treatment when you treat yourself, because you don't want to interfere with whatever the homeopath may be doing for you or your child. Another great way to learn more about treatment of these kinds of simple home ailments or like first aid situations also is just to join the National Center for Homeopathy and get their fantastic magazine, Homeopathy Today, which comes out 6 times a year. And it's always full of really helpful articles about treatment for these kinds of things. You can, and the National Center gives you lots of other benefits. I always talk about it on the show, including a website that's really comprehensive and is actually undergoing a huge revamp. Will be even better sometime in the fall. Yes, and if you join, then you can actually access all the past issues of Homeopathy Today online and search for particular topics. So that's an incredibly useful resource. And membership and your subscription together, it only costs $55 a year. So just go to nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. Another resource is my own book website, impossiblecure.com. And on that site, I have homeopathy links, so you can just click on that, and you can find pointers to the various homeopathic pharmacies and referrals to practitioners and lots more. I especially recommend to autism parents that they check out the autism page on that site with a lot of useful information. And, of course, also buy my book, which will really help you understand homeopathy much better. In fact, this show is essentially a short course, or maybe it's turning into a long course, based on my book, Impossible Cure, which is a comprehensive introduction to homeopathy. So it's my own book is not a self-help book, but it will teach you so much about homeopathy. It's even used as a textbook in the schools, but it's very accessible to the general public. If you'd also like to listen to past archives of this show, just go also to the ImpossibleCure.com website. And I have archive of all the Autism One shows. And then, of course, the past few months are still on the Autism One archives. And now, let's see. If you want to send me an email, if you want to contact me, I'd love to be able to clone myself and return phone calls to everybody who would like to talk to me. Sometimes I get calls from people, and they say, please call me, please call me. And I simply cannot, at my own expense, certainly, but I don't have the time to call everybody who's read my book and would like to ask me a question about homeopathy. But I am able, and I have been able to keep up with answering emails. I usually get back to people within a few days, at most a week or two, So if you'd like to send me an email, just email me at Lansky, L-A-N-S-K-Y, at impossiblecure.com, or A-Lansky, A-L-A-N-S-K-Y, at autism1.org. Okay, well, let's get down to today's show. I'm going to actually be hopefully completing a three-part series that I began in April about essentially the science of homeopathy. April's show was focused mostly on studies that show that homeopathy's effects are definitely not due to the placebo effect, in other words, the power of suggestion in patients. May's show was focused on clinical medical studies, double-blind placebo-controlled medical studies that prove homeopathy does have real effects, and in fact often much better effects than allopathic medicine. And today's show is, I think, might be particularly intriguing because we're going to really touch upon the question of, well, how do these remedies that are made from substances that are so dilute that not even a single molecule of the original substance is in them, how can these possibly work? So I'm going to begin with talking about real current scientific studies in areas like biophysics and ultra-dilution physics and material science that indicate, that point the way to understanding how these remedies can possibly be working. Now, the truth is, we still don't know precisely how homeopathic remedies are working, but just in the past 20 years, we've been getting more and more clues how this can be the case. And what's really amazing and interesting is that many of the results coming out back up and underline things that homeopaths themselves have discovered all the way back to Hahnemann in the early 1800s, things he discovered about the action of homeopathic remedies. Hopefully, I'll have time by the end of the show to also get into homeopathic models or how homeopaths themselves view the action of remedies. And those aren't scientific models, but there's essentially ways of understanding how the remedies operate that help you as a patient understand, too, the progress of your own treatment. So I will get started on that today, and I will finish that up, if I don't finish that today, in August. The July show is going to be a repeat of the March show, which many of you might want to tune into because it's an interview of another autism mom with a cured son, Erica McPhee. It's a really great show, so that's going to be rebroadcast in July because I'm going to be on vacation. In August, when I get back, we'll get back to this issue of the action of remedies, and I'll also throw in a little bit of a refresher on homeopathic philosophy. In the fall, I hope to get some more interviews with homeopaths, and we'll continue. So let's get down to it. So as I said, we don't really know yet, and I believe this will change in the next century, how homeopathic remedies are working. Homeopathy is an energy medicine, like acupuncture and hands-on healing methods. It does not work biochemically. And so the question is, well, how do we know? How can this possibly be working? And the key to understanding how the remedies work is to realize that there's growing evidence that some kind of energetic signature of the original substance is embedded in the dilution that is a homeopathic remedy. I think I've discussed before how remedies are made. Let's start with that very briefly, which is that whatever the original substance is diluted in a ratio of sometimes 1 to 10, but usually 1 to 100 serially. So let's say you take a tincture of some flour, you take a drop, and then you mix it with 99 drops of water, sometimes a mixture of water and alcohol. And then comes a critical step, which we call succussion, which is shaking it very vigorously. And then you take a drop of that and repeat it. Take a drop of that and mix it with 99 drops of the water, and then shake it. And each step is a 1 to 100 dilution. And those are the C potencies. For example, if you take a 30C That means that's been done 30 times, and the dilution is effectively 100 to the 30th, which is the same as 10 to the 60th. Now, at 10 to the 23rd, 10 to the 24th, you've exceeded the point in which it's likely that even a single molecule of that flower tincture is in the remedy. So the question is, how can these work? Well, the answer seems to be that some kind of energetic signature is embedded in this dilution. And there's more and more evidence now that this is not far-fetched, that it's actually backed up by science, especially material science. So essentially, the medicine operates non-chemically, not through molecules, not through a molecule of that flower tincture, for example, touching some cell in your body, but by the energy that was embodied in that flower somehow entering your body and spreading through your body through water, because your body is 70 to 80% water, and water is actually one of the best vehicles for transmission of energy signals, energy through your body. Thus, the message is energy and the medium is water. Now, I know some of you may be asking, hey, when I take one of those pills, it's not liquid, it's like a little white pill. Well, the way those pills are made is that the dilution is, a drop of dilution is placed on those little balls of actually they're usually milk sugar, and nevertheless that is imprinted onto that little ball. Now sometimes homeopathic practitioners give their patients water potencies to take. The way those are prepared is that little pill is put into the bottle of water, and then the energy is spread from that pill to the water in the bottle. I know it sounds far-fetched, but more and more studies back this up. So let's talk a little bit more about it. It's been known for many, many years that all substances carry an energetic signature, an electromagnetic signature, or some other energies we don't even know about, but certainly electromagnetic signature. And if you think about it, when you take a pill, let's say you just take an aspirin, what is the chance that some of molecule of that aspirin that you put into your stomach is actually going to hit the requisite target cells that you're trying to reach, or some other pill? You know, what is the chance of that? It's possible that even allopathic drugs are working through transmission of energy signals, more likely, because energy can travel through your body practically instantaneously, because your body is almost all water, and water is a fantastic medium for transmitting energy. Now, just I mentioned this, I think, in one of the previous shows, that a landmark paper in material science, not in chemistry, but the study of materials, was published in January, written by two very famous material science professors, that Rustam Roy and Bill Tiller. Rustam Roy from, Pennsylvania, Penn State, and Bill Tiller from Stanford, that state that it is highly plausible, and it's really more likely than not, that given the succussion, the shaking that's used to create the remedies, that there are structural bonds in the water that have been altered. And this has actually been buttressed by the studies of many other people. Take, for example, the work of Vittorio Elia. He's a professor of physical chemistry at the University of Naples in Italy, and he's been working on this field of ultra-dilutions. The field of ultra-dilution is an area of physics that has nothing to do with homeopathy. It's actually something that physicists study. And he's been working on this area since 1973. And his studies show that these ultra-dilutions, you know, way beyond Avogadro's number, which are prepared using this serial dilution and succussion, the shaking, retain added heat in the dilution indefinitely. And this is not true of just the plain water. So this is one measurement that something really has changed in this water that's due to this serial succussion. Moreover, newer studies indicate that this excess heat in the dilution increases over time, which indicates some kind of cascading or positive feedback effect. And in fact, it has been shown, that homeopathic remedies, even though you buy them and they have an expiration date on them, which is required by law, in truth, homeopathic remedies should stay, if they're stored properly, out of severe heat, out of light, should retain their effects indefinitely. People have been known to actually use remedies that were made in the 1800s completely successfully. Okay, another body of work that shows that something is really going on with these ultra dilutions is the work of Jacques Benveniste, and this work is truly mind-boggling. Now, Jacques Benveniste was he actually died just a few years ago, but before he died, I actually saw him speak at Stanford. He was a very famous French doctor, researcher, who was actually nominated for a Nobel Prize. And he got interested, somebody told him to investigate this stuff about ultra dilutions. And he did. Maybe much to his chagrin, because after he started publishing work in this area, his career just took a nosedive, because his association with the field of homeopathy, even though he wasn't investigating homeopathic remedies per se, but his association with these ultra dilutions brought all the skeptics and quackbusters in on him, and he lost his funding in France. But he kept working, and he developed his own lab. And since this all began in the 1980s, since then his work has been replicated by former skeptics. For example, Madeline Ennis, who is a Scottish professor, replicated his study, trying to disprove it in 2001, and she her results show that Benveniste's results were correct. So, what did he do? He was actually testing what happens if you take, let's say, some allopathic medicine that's known to have a particular effect, and what if you take that and do the potentizing process, what the homeopaths do, the serial dilution and succussion. And what he found, amazingly, is that these ultra dilutions retain the effects of the original substance. So, if you take, in his case, he took a dilution of a certain kind of antibody that it has a specific effect on certain tissues, and he did the ultra dilutions way beyond Avogadro's number, and they still had in vitro, in the lab, the same effect on those tissues than they would have had before. In fact, he took other antibodies that did not have that effect, and also created ultra dilutions of them, and they did not have the effect. In other words, the process of ultra dilution retains the effects of the original substance. Well, the ramifications of this are mind-boggling if you think about it, because what does this imply? This means that instead of charging mega bucks for allopathic medicines, the pharmacies could take one pill of that medicine and create enough doses for the entire world, essentially making drugs free. And obviously, Big Pharma would not be very interested in that. So, no wonder, the strong arm of the Big Pharma, rang down on Jacques Benveniste. But he made, in the course of his years of studies, various discoveries that buttress Hahnemann's own studies in the early 1800s. The first one he found is that the succussion step, the vigorous shaking, was absolutely necessary. If you just did the dilution without the shaking in between, nothing happens. It was just a dilution that becomes nothing but water. The other thing he found was that heat degrades the effects of the ultra dilution. This is also something that Hahnemann found. And if it's very severe heat, like boiling, then it completely degrades it. But if it, let's say, it's degraded somewhat, that shaking the dilution can reactivate it somewhat. It increases the effects of the substance. And this is something you'll find that often what homeopaths do when they get a remedy is they'll always shake it up. And it might just be habit, but, you know, it's viewed that shaking increases the strength of the remedy. And that because of that, that is actually used as a procedure in some kinds of dosing, is that when you take your dose, you shake it up first in a liquid dose. He also finds, Benveniste, that the most efficient mixture of the diluent, the stuff you do the dilution in, is a mixture of alcohol and water instead of just water or just alcohol. And he found that the same proportions of alcohol and water that are most effective, they are the same that Hahnemann himself found were the most effective. So he really buttressed all those studies that Hahnemann himself did back in the early 1800s. Now, Benveniste went on and did even more mind-boggling experiments that, you know, even I find just amazing, but which is he surmised that there was some kind of electromagnetic effect in the water. What's becoming, some studies are starting to show that it's possible that, for example, the bonds between the water molecules are affected by the original substance and form structures. But there also is some kind of electromagnetic signature in these dilutions. So what Benveniste did is that he essentially recorded these signals from the water. He was discussing this when I saw him at Stanford. He would put a signal through the water and record the change that came out through the water. So he recorded how the water affected some signal he put through the water. He recorded it digitally. He sent that digital recording by email to other labs all over the world, several other labs, just this email signal. They replayed that signal back into some water in their labs, and they found that that water now also carried the properties of the original substance. Now that is even more mind-boggling, because not only do you need, can you create, you know, billions of doses of some substance from a single pill of it, let's say, but you can record it digitally and you can just send it over the internet. Imagine if you could download all your drugs just playing some signal into some water, and then there's your drug. Completely free drugs, homeopathic or otherwise. So obviously, this is just really scandalous. But you might check, I hope that site's still up, his lab website, digibio.com. Anyway, okay, so let's say we now believe that something is in these water dilutions, some kind of electromagnetic effect. So, and that effect enters our body when we take the remedy. And what happens? How come this works? Well, the body, as I said, is 70 to 80% water, and electromagnetic signals can be passed through the water in your body incredibly quickly. People who take homeopathic remedies often say, you know, I took this and then, like, it doesn't always happen, but sometimes in acute diseases like the flu, insect bites, etc., you can take the remedy. I've seen this myself. And within minutes, the giant welt from the bee sting goes down. I've seen this myself in one of my sons, where he took the remedy Apis, made from bee, which is a remedy for hot swelling and stings and stuff. And it's useful for that, good thing to know for the summer, Apis. And he took a dose of that after getting a wasp sting, and within minutes it was gone. It was like it hadn't been there at all. And he had a giant welt on his arm, like 3 inches in diameter. So how can this work? Well, I talk about this in my book too. This is all in chapter 7, by the way. And basically, one way of explaining it is by appealing to complexity and chaos theory, which I must admit I don't really understand, but I've read some material about it, and I try to explain some of the ideas in my book. So the first thing to understand about this area is that it's the study of very complicated, chaotic systems. Systems where it seems like everything is chaos, and that's, you might look at nature around you and there's just so much going on. It's a complicated, chaotic system. Nevertheless, within those structures, within those complex systems, there can be structures. And in particular, let me back up a little. Many of you may have heard of this term, the butterfly effect. There was even a movie about that by Ashton Kutcher, with Ashton Kutcher in it. And the butterfly effect means that some very small effect, like the beating of the wings of a butterfly, if it happens in a precisely the right moment in one of these really complex systems, it can have huge effects. So the butterfly effect is saying that this butterfly flapping its wings in Central America could trigger off a hurricane in Florida if it happens exactly the right way, this sort of tipping point, and that's the butterfly effect. Now, what these tipping points are sometimes called attractors. They are small effects that can create patterns in the chaos, and we see that in nature. There's something called fractals, which are patterns in otherwise chaotic systems, that patterns that repeat themselves. So for example, if you look at the petals of a flower, you'll notice that there's petals within petals within petals, that the structure in the large is similar to the structure in the small, if you look way, way, way down. Those are fractals. Anyway, these kinds of structures do naturally occur in otherwise chaotic systems. So there really is structure in the chaos, and those structures are created by these attractors, which are these very small effects. Now, according to this book that I discuss by Bella Veit and Signorini, they really understand this complexity and chaos theory, and they relate it to homeopathy. This is discussed in my book. And what they indicate is that what disease is like is a pathological attractor. It's something in your body that has caused the somewhat chaotic workings of your body to not function, often to become too rigid, to be set in a certain way that is not conducive to health. Essentially, your body becomes habituated to a disease state. You know, the way the body should work is it should be very flexible. It should, if something happens to it, it should be able to swing back towards some kind of homeostasis, what we call homeostasis, which is a sort of balance. So disease is a sort of kind of stuck state, out of balance, and your body gets used to it, stuck in this negative pathological attractor. It forms a pattern that it's unable to move out of. And what a homeopathic remedy is viewed as is as a positive attractor. It's a very, very small signal, but it's exactly the right signal. And it's precisely chosen, that signal, to move the systems of your body out of this stuck pathological state into a state of balance again, so that your body regains its flexibility. And these kinds of attractors, something that can move something out of a pathological state into its normal state again, is called a high quality attractor. And that's what homeopathic remedies are. So why are they? Well, because they are selected to match the energetic pattern of the person. In other words, and I've talked about how remedies are chosen by a homeopath. That's exactly how they're chosen. That's what the law of similars is. So let me remind you what the law of similars is. It's the basis of homeopathy. In fact, the word homeopathy means, homeo means similar, pathy means suffering. The science of homeopathy is built based on one law which decides what substance you take to cure you. And that law is this. If a substance can cause symptoms similar to the ones you're having, then that substance can cure you. Now, why is that then? Why is that? It seems counterintuitive. If I talked about Apis. Why? We know that a bee sting will cause that welt on your arm. Why is taking that Apis curing the bee sting? Well, because the bee sting, a person who is suffering, let's say, from a bee sting, they're in a state of this swelling and pain and heat and whatever. People who've had a bee sting know exactly what that state is like. That's their state in that situation. It's very anxious, it's very busy, oh, my arm is hurting. That is the state of the Apis, of Apis. And that becomes sort of your pathological attractor. That matches you. That's the state you're in. Now, if taking Apis can cause that state, then that signal, the Apis state, is like exactly the high quality attractor. It's exactly something that kind of matches you. And because of that, it can move you. Your body will resonate with it somehow. It matches you. It is that little butterfly wing that matches your state. It's exactly the right vibration. And it can unstuck you out of that pathological state. So, now this is really the best time to just begin discussing how homeopaths view how homeopathy works. So let me see what time it is. Okay, we got about, I'm going to take about 5 more minutes, and then we'll continue with this discussion in August. Okay, so how have homeopaths understood how their remedies work? I mean, homeopaths have been working now with Hahnemann's system for nearly 200 years, long before there was knowledge even of bacteria and viruses, before we knew about sterile procedures, before we knew what Avogadro's number is, before we knew about modern chemistry, before we knew about chaos theory, before ultra-dilution physics. Long before all this, Hahnemann, in the early 1800s, discovered that this process of ultra-dilution works. And he, you know, he himself was a chemist, among other things, including a doctor and a translator, and I've talked about him in the past. He realized this couldn't be working chemically. It was very unlikely. So he surmised that it was an energetic process of some kind, some subtle process on a different plane. That's what he called it, the dynamic plane. And at the time, there was a lot of belief in vital energy, which we now know as chi or prana. And so he surmised this is where these remedies were working. And he himself came up with various ways of understanding it. And I'm going to talk about 4 different models in Chapter 7 of my book. And I'm going to just end today's with the first one. So, you're given this remedy. You're given Apis, which is like, causes the state of a bee sting. And how does it cure the bee sting? And the first model is actually is probably one of the most intuitive, I find, which is the model of action and counteraction. We all know the saying, for each action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. And in fact, the body and nature really works this way. The body always works by maintaining homeostasis, which is balance. So we know, for example, if we take a lot of sugar or caffeine, we might get high and energized, but then the body will react to that. And we'll have like a sugar low or sudden tiredness. And then, of course, we take some more sugar or caffeine to hep ourselves up again. Now, this process of homeostasis, regaining homeostasis, is how your body works. In fact, you die without it because your body temperature is maintained in the proper range that way, and your blood pressure and the constituents in your blood content. All of these things are managed by your body through a process of homeostasis. If things kind of go slightly one direction, your body works to swing it in the other direction. Now, this is how the remedy actually works. It provides the action. Your body, the healing process, is the counteraction. That's why the law of similars works. So, if your body has a bee sting, and you give it that tiny little energetic nudge, that attractor that says, look, this is what's happening. Your body is swelling up. Then your body will react and remove that state. So your body reacts if it's given information about symptoms by removing the symptoms. Now, of course, that's how people view allergy shots. You're given a little bit of the thing you're allergic to, and your body reacts against it and removes the allergic tendency. But from the homeopathic point of view, allergy shots are given in toxic doses, injected directly into your body, too much, over and over again, and is considered actually a very dangerous thing to do. And in fact, many people can trace lots of their health problems to getting allergy shots. But at some level, the principle is the same. You could say the same thing about why Ritalin works for kids who have ADD. Why would you be giving speed, essentially, to kids who are speedy work? Well, on a very crude level, this is homeopathy in action. You're giving the kids speed, and it slows them down in reaction. But in general, once again, too, the use of Ritalin from the standpoint of a homeopath is like giving toxic doses of a substance to a person over and over. This is not necessary. Just giving the correct homeopathic remedy in this very tiny dose is enough to shift to the energetic state of the person, if it's correct, if it is matches the person exactly. And that's the whole art of homeopathy, is finding that correct remedy. Now, in many ways, if you think about it, this is the complete opposite of the way most allopathic drugs work. Most allopathic drugs work is according to a principle of antipathy, which is you give something that's the opposite of the person's state. So let's say somebody is... that's why a lot of drugs start with the word anti, like antihistamines. Somebody is swelling due to some allergic reaction, and you give something that removes the swelling. But what does that do? That's the action. It removes the swelling. But how will the body react to that? It may react through a counteraction and increase the swelling even more. And in fact, that's what happens. If you spray your nose, let's say, with Afrin, yeah, very quickly your nose will become decongested. But then they always warn the bottle, don't take this too long, because then even worse congestion will happen. That's because your body's counter-reaction to the action of the decongestant. So, and in fact, if you keep taking these antihistamines, anti-decongestants, etc., over and over and over, suppressing those symptoms you're having, this is what homeopathy believes leads to more severe disease, because you're not letting the body behave the way it wants to. You're suppressing it, and then it further drives your energy disease state further into the interior of the body. And I've talked about this, and I'll talk about it more in August, which is one of the most important concepts of homeopathic philosophy, is that suppression is a bad way to deal with disease, because it leads to deeper, more chronic disease. And we see that in our society. We take so many pills and things to suppress our symptoms, and instead we have very severe chronic disease in our society. Now, of course, there are times when you have to do suppression to get yourselves out of a life and death situation. I'm not saying if you're having anaphylactic shock, you shouldn't take an EpiPen and save yourself. but I'm talking about just routine, ongoing use of antipathic drugs to suppress your state. A much better approach is to try homeopathy, which is very gentle, which tries to find that very subtle, correct energetic signal that will remove the tendency, for example, to allergies completely. Essentially, just to summarize, that the homeopathic remedy, if precisely picked correctly, is a very small energetic stimulus that somehow matches your state and gets you unstuck. The body, it doesn't work chemically, it doesn't force your body to get unstuck, but it stimulates the body in such a way that the body reacts in counter-reaction, and then the body will remove that energetic state from you. So it's action, counteraction, or action, reaction. And this is way beyond the concept of immunization or allergy shots. This works on all levels. It's not just a reaction to physicals. It also works on the mental level, the emotional level, and as well as the physical symptoms. If you are a person with anxiety disorder, for example, that means you react to you're so anxious that even things that wouldn't bother most people make you anxious. You're just anxious. You're stuck in this anxiety state. The correct remedy that matches that anxiety state, a remedy that in fact can cause anxiety in a person who doesn't have this anxiety disorder, at least temporarily. These remedies don't permanently cause the anxiety disorder, but can cause an anxious state. If an anxious person takes these anxiety drugs, it will make their body finally see this. In a sense, it matches them, and then the body will react to this state and remove the anxiety tendency. I have stories like that, many stories like that in my book. So that's it for now, and I hope you found this interesting, and we're going to continue this discussion about homeopathic models of remedy action and the relationship as well to homeopathic philosophy in the August show. So, well, I thank you for tuning in. And I want to encourage you again to visit my book website, impossiblecure.com. If you buy my book, you'll learn this and a lot more about homeopathy. I also want to encourage all the parents of autistic children out there to join, to check out a website that's a great resource. It's the homeopathysnc.org. It's a website and Yahoo group where parents can ask questions, homeopaths who participate, and parents, and it's just a sort of a whole, discussion forum. And people should also join the National Center for Homeopathy and find out more about homeopathy through them, which is nationalcenterforhomeopathy.org. So remember, be well, and remember that there's truly hope with homeopathy, and have a great summer. Okay, bye-bye.